Hey everyone, it's been a while. This is a limited series of Mark versus the World. I hope you guys enjoy. Hello ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to the second part of Mark versus Parenting. In this part, I'm going to discuss speech and development, as this is something that, well, it's very important to me, and it's something that me and my wife and our family as a whole have been dealing with when it comes to our toddler for the last couple of years. I can only really start at the beginning of the story. So when my son was about a year and 3 months, we moved from where we used to live in Southeast London to our current place where we live in Luton. And a couple months after we moved, we literally moved like February 2020. And by sort of April, as everyone knows who's listening, there was the whole pandemic and things got shut down. So with things getting shut down, that also meant like mums and kids clubs were shut down. Nurseries were shut down for a period of time because of lockdown. And it was very hard to get my son to interact with other kids. And now, well, not now, my son's always had sort of speech delay because he wasn't showing signs of talking. But I feel with the way things are, especially also, like, admittedly, I think the, the social care of Bedfordshire or Luton or whatever it falls under is absolutely crap. Because I have friends that have kids that are similar age to my son, and they were still getting, I can't remember what the person calls, but, like, you know, the person that comes and sees your kid at various periods of time, they were still getting those visits. But here we were just getting telephone calls and video calls, and it's not the same sort of thing. And people having to judge people's development from a distance isn't really helpful. And they would give us advice, but even the advice wouldn't really work, and you didn't have like a face to speak to, because it seemed like every single time we got spoke to, I think it was like the, I don't want to say district nurse, but whoever that person is, it seemed to be a different person every time we had interactions with them. So imagine, I don't know, you speak to someone every 4 to 6 weeks, but the person you speak to is different every 4 to 6 weeks because one person's left this service and joined that service, and you're getting someone else, and it just felt like a kind of domino effect. But anyway, so then when schools were open, we did enroll him at one nursery who I didn't think had the... At the time, I thought they would be able to manage and be able to help, but I felt like they didn't really have the resources to deal with someone who has the challenges that my son did. Because when my son was at that time when he started going nursery, when he was like closer to 2 years old, so it was sort of like, you know, 9 months later, he wasn't really used to interacting with kids because he never really had that. When we lived in London, my wife would go to like a mums and kids club every Wednesday, and he would kind of get a little bit of interaction with kids. Then when we moved and then the pandemic and all that kind of stuff, my son kind of regressed, and he went like 8 months without any interaction with other children. And even though obviously the topic is actually about speech and development, I feel, just from my experience in dealing with my son, I feel that when kids have the most interaction with other people their own age, in whether it's a classroom environment, a play environment, or just, you know, like a consistent 4 to 5 hours a day with someone who's the same sort of age as them, I feel kids hold other kids, if that makes sense. So what I mean is, if my son sees other kids talking, interacting and behaving a certain way, and then seeing that behaviour being... you know, favourably treated, then my son would then mimic those actions, if that makes sense. I know it can be negatively, because sometimes if kids are bad, they get loads of attention, and kids may see that and be like, oh, I need to act bad now to get the same attention from the teacher. But it does also have some positives. And where my son was lacking that, I feel that's not the full reason why he's got speech delay. I think there's multiple reasons. Like, he lives in a bilingual household. I speak English, my wife speaks English and Portuguese. My wife, when she speaks to anyone in her family, will speak to them in Portuguese. All my wife's close friends are also Brazilian, so they again speak Portuguese. So my son possibly has a conflict of listening to two languages all the time, which could also be a factor. But going back to with the story of my son is, so after he was at that nursery and we didn't feel that he was progressing the way the way we wanted him to, and even though we were willing to pay, they couldn't give us enough hours, so he was only going like half days and he wasn't really getting anywhere. We transferred him to a new nursery where he got full hours, we pay for some of his hours and stuff like that, and it's quite remarkable how much he's changed. So he changed to the new nursery, I want to say January this year. And obviously they've just broken up for the summer, so he's finished sort of end of July. And my son, even though he's not saying full sentences, his vocabulary went from maybe one or two words to now he can say about 15, 16 words. He can express himself what he wants, and he at least gives us clear hand gestures to mean certain things. So if, for example, he's eating dinner and he doesn't want to eat anymore and he wants to finish, he might not say the word finish, but at least he gives us like a double cross, crossing his arms and holding them quite low, which is sort of what he says to mean finish. And he, for example, we've got all kinds of like cards with words on in the house, and he'll like point to things that he wants, will confirm it by then showing the item that's on the card. So like the card has an image and a word. We'll say the word, we'll point at the image, and then we'll get the physical thing, and then he'll then confirm to us that that is the thing he wants. Because sometimes he doesn't necessarily want the thing that's on the card, but he wants something similar to that, and that gets a bit problematic. But we are, it's a process of like updating cards and changing cards over. And when he gets new toys, we make new cards with the name of the toy and the image of the toy. So it's working, it's being effective. He is communicating, he is developing more, he is being more independent. Because I remember while he was still at the previous nursery, we still pretty much had to feed him every single meal because he didn't want to pick up the spoon. Even though he knew how to pick up a spoon, he knows how to like eat desserts and things he likes to eat, but he would kind of refuse to feed himself dinner. Now it's got to the point where he is actually feeding himself more, he's being more independent, he's drinking out of cups, but he's obviously a bit delayed and a bit behind. I feel part of it is the lack of social interaction, part of it was maybe us speaking the multiple languages in the household, and obviously I work full time. At the time when he was like really, really young, I used to go into the office all the time, and it's only since post-pandemic, I'm at home more, so I can be more of an influence at him at home. So now I, for example, take him to nursery, pick him up from nursery, and like do things with him after nursery, spend time with him, bath him most days. Like I spend a lot more time with my son now because I pretty much go into the office only one day a week. And now we have a second child, and we've kind of, it sounds terrible we're saying this, but it's like our first son is an example of the things that we might have done wrong and the things that we've done right. So hopefully when it comes to our daughter, her speech and her development can be a lot more smoothie. Part of also a problem with my son's development, not so much speech, but like in terms of development, in terms of his independence, was I was very scared of him like hurting himself, or him, you know, ruining a carpet, or him getting something dirty and stuff like that. And what you got to realize is this is like materialistic things that can be replaced, but your child's development is really important, and especially at like a very early stage, because kids probably learn and take in more information they get under the age of 4 than probably over 4. And it sounds mad because you think, well, you go through school and you learn so much stuff about topics like mathematics, science. You learn so much about, like, for example, geography, history, and so forth. But in terms of, like, a child or a person, like a young person, you've got to realise that just from looking at things, they take in so many pieces of information. Then when you speak to them and how you gesture and how you smile and how stuff, they get more information. And not information in terms of academic information, but information about like survival, social interaction, independence, motor skills, all these kind of things that are really important to us as human beings and being like what help us become, you know, well-adjusted, functioning adults, more so than, you know, academia. Is really important. And I feel that, like, obviously me and my wife are working very hard now, and we are, you know, communicating with his new nursery, with his care assistant and various other people to sort of make sure that he has like a structured learning, but also that we're all singing off the same hymn sheet. Because there was a time with his previous nursery, they wouldn't really say what he'd done regularly. They would tell us like at the end of the month or the end of like a couple month period, and we've been doing maybe something slightly different, which is more likely going to cause a hindrance. Whereas if we're all doing the same thing and the same consistency, it would have helped him with his development more. Partially, that's our fault for not maybe going to get that information, but partially it's also their fault for not being willing to give us that information at like a prompt time, if that makes sense. You know, give us like the structure, plan, and what's going to happen with development. And by the time they were looking to like do that kind of thing, we were already like ready to move on Harry to somewhere else because they couldn't give him the full-time hours and just wasn't really happy with the level of care. And also he was always coming back with little injuries and stuff, and they never really would tell us of like, you know, I'm changing him for his bath and I'm noticing he's getting cuts on his knees and so forth, which is fine, all kids get cuts and stuff like that, but they should sort of explain things. Or like he hit his head and they said it was like a little millimeter cut, and it was like a 2-3 inch cut, so it's like, you know, a quite a big difference. But anyway, that's enough about them. I'm not trying to bash them, and sometimes when it comes to like selecting nurseries for your kids, you've got to pick the best one you possibly can, whether you've got to pay for it, whether you're getting it free from the state. You should always try and get them the best place, not just the convenient place, like, oh, it's on my way to work or such and such. You should always make sure that you take priority of where your kid's going to be learning those sort of like early stages stuff, because you don't want to waste your time, but also you want to make sure that they have the resources and have the right people there for your kids. So I've talked about the previous nursery. I've talked about stuff that we've done in the past. I've also briefly talked about, for example, the lack of social interaction with other kids, which is also a hindrance. And I think it's very important because I think, as I said earlier, kids inspire other kids and kids learn more, I feel, from their peers. As well as their parents, I get you teach your kids a lot, but I feel like having peers or having siblings is also a key thing for them to learn and for them to develop. And I feel that like if you don't have any siblings, the first sort of relationships you have with people or your peers is only going to be when you're in places like nursery, daycare centres, creche, whatever you want to call it. It's when you're young and you're being around other people your own age, that's sort of how that helps to shape you. Positively and negatively, but I feel it's more positive than negative based on what you get out of it. And I feel that, I mean, for anyone that's listened to this who hasn't started a family yet or wants to start a family in the end, it's good to, you know, kind of have a plan, both be on the same sort of hymn sheet, and kind of, if it doesn't work, being willing to pivot and being flexible once that your kids, you know, is attending some sort of like nursery or school, because I feel you should always work with the people, not work against them, because that's counterproductive. And it's frustrating sometimes, because you kind of, when you for example, as I said, we know people that have kids that are similar age to our son, and when we see how well they've developed, you sometimes as a parent feel, have I done really a bad job because my son's not at that person's level? And what you got to realize is, and a very good friend, shout out to Zara, big up Zara, she said it to me, and it put my mind at ease. She was like, well, all kids are different and people do it at their own rate, and they'll get there when they need to get there, and they'll get there in their own time. And that's another thing as well, it's all good aiding and putting things in place to help your kids with their development, but you shouldn't expect them to have the same results as another kid, because kids, everyone's individual, everyone's different, everyone's brain works. Some people are more practical, some people are more thinkers, you know, it's never, and some kids are just geniuses and some kids are average, and there's nothing wrong with being an average kid. Also, certain kids have learning difficulties, and also that's a very hard process to assess. So when we first took my son to the first nursery, they were saying that, oh, they think he's autistic and he's on the spectrum, yada, yada, yada. We went through the process of doing like hearing tests, sight tests, all these other kind of tests, and also some like cognitive learning tests, seeing a couple specialists and so forth, and went to the new nursery where they have the facility to deal with kids that have slight learning difficulties. And like for a couple hours each day, kids get to go in a separate room where there's only like 4 or 5 of them. So they get a bit more one-to-one time, because it's like 3 teachers and 6 kids, so you know it's 2 kids per teacher, whereas in their normal classroom environment I think it's 4 kids per teacher or 5 kids per teacher. So again, it's that better one-to-one. And basically what the sort of, I don't want to say the end of the story, but like the crux of it is that they don't even think my son has autism. They think, if anything, he may be on like more of the ADHD spectrum, because he's very hyperactive and got a lot of energy, but he doesn't really get angry. He's quite a happy child. He's you know, my son's always smiling, always laughing, always running around. But that's the one thing, he doesn't really like to sit still. But at nursery, I say that, but at nursery, especially when he's in the meadow room, my wife's gone in, because with this nursery, I think like 3 times a week, we can go in for like an hour and see how they're getting on. And generally, when he's in the meadow room, which is this room that's for like 6 kids and stuff, he's usually seated, he usually responds well to what the teachers do, he kind of listens, he waits for his turn for things, he shares and all kinds of things like that, and he's more calm and chill. But when he's in the main classroom, which I've been and I can attest this to myself, he just runs around like a madman. But he's not rude, he doesn't attack any kids, he kind of does respect when a teacher does tell him something, he will stop and listen for a bit. But he doesn't, like, for example, stay on a task for more than sort of 5 to 6 minutes, which is fine. I mean, you know, he's already like 20 steps ahead than he was in so many other aspects that, okay, if he's a bit hyperactive and he's still not fully making sentences now, but at least he is speaking more. And I do feel also, this is probably going to be like my last point because I don't want to drag on too much with this, but I feel, sounds weird, but things like nursery rhymes and continuously listen to nursery rhymes and things like the alphabet and numbers and stuff like that, that also helps. Because again, as I've said to you a few times, my son doesn't talk, but he knows his alphabet from A to Z. He has like a Duplo / Lego blocks, which are like an alphabetical, like with all the alphabet, and you can randomize them all you want, and he'll just randomly put them in the right order. Then he'll put all the numbers in the right order. He sometimes also will start in the middle and still do it in the right order. So he'll start with J, go J to Z, then go and then do A to I, and then he'll do like different kinds of orders and stuff like that, different kind of patterns, where he'll build them as a long tower going from A to Z, or again from Z to A. Yeah, so he knows his letters, he knows his numbers. He's starting to say things like A is for apple, which is good. That's pretty much one of the few sentences he says, but he does, yeah, his vocabulary is increasing, and he's also picking up the odd like Portuguese word as well, which is obviously good for us because, as I've stated earlier, like all my wife's family are Brazilian, so they all speak Portuguese, Brazilian Portuguese, not mainland Portuguese, because supposedly there's a difference, but as I don't speak either, doesn't really matter to me. But it's good that he's picking up some words of Portuguese, it's good that he's speaking some English, and it's good that he is now communicating. But it has been quite a frustrating journey. And even with the fact that he's had assessments, there has been like massive delays in these assessments and like been put on a waiting list from this group of specialists. Then he speaks to like someone who works there. Then he gets some tests and assessments. Then we'll just get another email saying, oh yeah, he's still on the waiting list. That's great, fan, fucking tastic. It's a very frustrating journey when you're dealing with a child that has either special needs or is speech delayed or isn't where they're meant to be, where they're meant to be supposedly. Like with in terms of their like development as children. But it's always important to be patient and to not really get mad at your kid, because it's not your kid's fault, you know. I mean, no, it's not your kid's fault. It's not necessarily your fault as well, because again, if your child, for example, is on the autistic spectrum, it's genetics. You can't really do anything about it. And all you can do is do whatever specialists say to put in place and see if it works. And also, what I would say is, I think I said it earlier, but I'm just going to, you know, confirm the point is, to not be too rigid in your approach. Be like, if you have, how can I say this? If you and your partner, or if you're a single parent, you have an approach you want to try, by all means, follow it to the T. But if something is not working, don't be scared to change, adapt, or ask, how can I pivot this? How can I change this? Because I've tried A, B, C, and I'm not getting D, E, F. I'm getting G, H, I, or I'm still stuck at A. And maybe they'll say, okay, why don't you try L, M, N, O, which is like something different, maybe a bit further on. Because again, that's another thing as well with children. Sometimes, especially like, I'm talking about slightly older kids, but when we're like 6 or 7, I remember like as a child, I was 8 or 9 in primary school, and I used to sometimes act up because I felt that the work wasn't challenging and I was bored. And because I was bored, I didn't really care, because I felt like I was just getting information I already knew. and I wanted to be challenged, and I didn't get recognized until I was like in secondary school, that I was kind of smart, and I got put into a lot of like, especially for like maths and science. English, I'm not the best, if you can hear this podcast, you can hear I don't speak properly, because, you know, I'm not really the best at like structure in the English language, but I was very good at maths and science, and that only got really recognized as I got older, when I was like 14, 15, 16, sort of like towards the end of like formal school years or whatever. And that's the thing with kids as well. Sometimes kids get bored of the same, and if you want them to develop, you have to challenge them enough so that it's something they can complete, but also don't make it too easy, because again, if you set them like a really easy challenge, that then becomes boring as well, and just always have to like change and pivot. Like it's a big thing. And shout out to all the parents that are doing a fantastic job, and shout out to the parents that are also a bit lost and need a bit of help, and don't be afraid to ask help, whether it's help from your parents or your friends who have kids, or teachers, or, you know, educators as a whole, you know, because all we want as parents is the best for our kids, and that our kids can be, you know, well-adjusted people when they grow up, and that they have the skills and the tools to do what they want to do in life. You know, be successful in their own definition of successful, not in what I might count as successful or what you might count as successful, but whatever makes them happy and can give them a decent, sustainable life, you know? And that's sort of it for today. That's the end of this episode. I apologize if the audio is not amazing. I'm recording this late at night in my front room. I'm on some very, very squeaky furniture. But anyway, if you've liked this episode or have anything to say about this episode, or want to talk to me about any past episode I did from the previous series, by all means, give me a shout. My email address is markversustheworld1@gmail.com. That's markversustheworld1@gmail.com. Send me any emails, or even if you've got any like requests for future episodes. I'm not saying I want to bring this back full time, but if someone gives me an interesting topic or someone wants to come on and talk about something, I'm all ears. Anyway, guys, thank you, and until next time, this was Mark versus the World.